What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd, my co-host, who of course also covers the team for The Athletic. He's Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drantz, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great.
And happy long weekend to all our listeners,
yes.
Of course, or at least a somber one.
Yes. I never know what to say on this or Remembrance Day. Acknowledge that it's a day off for people, but also, yeah, of course, not a celebratory one. So I hope you're taking some time. I hope you are able to enjoy some time with your family. And then also, of course, include some time for reflection and learning and whatever else you can fit in today. But if you are joining us, we're really glad that you are on Monday of a long weekend here. Big show coming up today. Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and InGoal Magazine. He'll join us at 12:30, always a pleasure to chat with Woodley. And then 1:30, Zach Lang covering the Oilers will chat with us. Of course, the Canucks play the Oilers tonight. They played a couple of times on the weekend, Drantzer, and man, we are right in the depths of preseason vibes right now. This is the meat of the schedule, where there's the excitement at the beginning. It's like, all right, finally hockey's back. We get to see them play games. And then, you know, at the end, it's the dress rehearsal. It's the whole team. This middle stretch can be a little tough.
Yeah, and I think you had that first game back at Rogers Arena, and I think the fans brought a certain energy to the proceedings. It was actually a pretty violent game, emotional preseason game, all things considered, which made for a fun watch. And then you got the up and down the ice rush chance fest in Abbotsford, right, where always great energy in that building when the Canucks go and bring the NHL team to play exhibition in the Valley. And, you know, I thought that was felt on the ice again, even if it was a brand of hockey that I'm sure Rick Tocchet didn't love watching the tape of the next day, right? Mm-hmm. Saturdays and Friday felt...
That's preseason hockey. That is preseason hockey right there.
It felt like preseason hockey. It felt like preseason lineups for the most part. You know, and I think one thing that's sort of been reinforced to me is how set this lineup really was coming in. You know, with the exception of Tocchet seeming like he's maybe taking a real look at Hoglander, Garland, Ratu as a trio, right? Not just the Ratu. Has Ratu pulled ahead of Neil Simon and Phil DiGiuseppe in the battle for 13th forward, right? Like, beyond that plot line, which is, you know, it's got some juice, I guess.
Oh, I think it has a lot.
You think it has a lot of juice?
I think it has a lot of juice. We'll get into it more in the whiteboard, but yeah, I do.
Okay. Beyond that storyline, which has a lot of juice...
That's right.
It's a juicy...
Direct quote. A juicy, juicy storyline.
Fresh squeezed. Beyond that part, I do think that's kind of it, right? It's like Tocchet thinking about maybe what this lineup looks like or this middle six looks like in Joshua's absence, and seems to be coming back to that trio again and again.
Mm-hmm. All right. Without further ado, let's get into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, September 30th, and we'll run through some headlines quickly here. Of course, the Canucks lose a pair of preseason games over the weekend. I don't think we have to dwell too long on the results from those ones. As we were saying, very much preseason affairs in terms of the intensity and the vibes and all of that. They play tonight in Edmonton, their second to last, their penultimate preseason game. Yeah, that's right. Gotta break that out when you have a chance.
Let's go.
That's in Edmonton. We haven't seen an official lineup or roster that they're sending tonight. Now, I will say one area of intrigue perhaps in this one is, will JT Miller play, who of course has not played yet? And it's kind of been a shifting target from, oh, he'll play a couple games too over the weekend. Well, he'll play one for sure. Maybe he'll play Monday. And I'm still very much of the mind that, look, he's practicing. He's a full participant in all these skates.
Yeah.
Maybe he has like a tiny, tiny thing that's slightly bothering him. But if it was even game one of the regular season, it would be no issue whatsoever for him to play, right? Like, that's about as far as I'm willing to go at this point. If he didn't play Friday, okay, and he doesn't play any preseason games, then that's a little weird. But even if he doesn't get in tonight, I'm kind of like, whatever. If he plays Friday, it's fine. If he plays a preseason game, it's fine. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, look, sorry. You're right to not care, even if he doesn't play a preseason game, provided that, you know, the club is clear about why.
Sure.
Provides sort of a basic update on his status and reassures fans, paying customers who are planning to attend opening night, you know, that Miller is either going to be in or offers an explanation for why he's not, right? I mean, so long as that happens, I don't care, in part because, you know, like, I've interviewed JT Miller after he, like, blocked a shot with his foot. Mm-hmm. This guy's pain tolerance is elite. You know what I'm saying? Like, this guy can play hurt. He does play hurt. It's not a thing. And so as a result of that, I think even if he is dealing with a minor nick, it's not something I'm concerned about. I do, however, want to capitulate when I'm casted as like a funny conspiracy theory based on the evidence available to me last week. That was incorrect. There's definitely something there. I'm not saying it's a big something or something we should care about.
But it's like at least there's a reason why he hasn't played yet.
There's something.
Yeah, beyond just, oh, they're holding him out for a little bit. Yeah. But again, I think most likely scenario from where we stand is, yes, there is something, but it's a very, very minor something. That seems to be what the fact pattern suggests the most to me. Right? Because if it was a major something, he's probably not skating regularly and talking to the media regularly and doing all that stuff. So
yeah.
A minor something that probably
doesn't matter, but might.
We don't need to worry about. Yes.
But unless we do,
you never know.
No, and you know what? It's one of those things in sports, and you know, if you play fantasy sports, if you've tracked other sports, if you follow hockey, right? Like, there's so much that gets said in the preseason. Like, I sometimes feel like when people are previewing what's going to happen with like a hockey team season or a football team season or mm-hmm. this player or that player, or, you know, a mega team or around any league, it's like if you dig deep enough, that you can find any take you want. You can literally find any take you want on. And the key is you get 2 weeks in the season, and you're like, that thing, that guy not playing in preseason actually mattered. He's starting slow. Or LOL. And people said, you know,
people like, said it would matter when he scores 2 goals in the first game. 100%.
And then like goes 10 without one. And of course you never have to capitulate. But point being, it's hard to know in these instances, like, does it matter or does it not? Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where you get 2-3 weeks into the season and sort of think about it. My gut is that it's not a big deal either way, but I do want to file it away. I don't want to completely dismiss it.
Yeah, it's. I think at this point it's worth mentioning, but again, just mentioning at this stage, but not turning it into like, are the wheels already falling off for the Canucks, right? You know what I mean? No. Like, oh, things are going bad again. It's like, no, we don't know that. It's just that he hasn't played a preseason game just yet.
I just, you know, I drafted a lot of Christian McCaffrey 101. It's not a big deal. It'll be fine. Everyone says it's minor.
No injury concerns for Christian McCaffrey.
There's been no major update from the team. He's on the sidelines. You can see it. And then, of course, it mattered, right? So I'm just saying.
Yeah. You never know.
I've got burned like in the last 3 weeks. I'm not dropping it.
All right. Another headline for today. Sammy Blais, this was announced maybe just 20 minutes ago, released from his PTO with the Canucks. Now, of course, Sammy Blais, the unique nature of this one is that he had signed an AHL deal with Abbotsford and then was on a PTO to try to make the NHL team with the Canucks. So he's been released from the PTO, but still has the AHL contract with the Abbotsford Canucks, and
provided, of course, that he doesn't get an NHL offer, because most of those have NHL outs.
Sure.
Yeah.
You hear the way that Rick Tocchet has talked about the experiment with Sammy Blais, and he's tended to make it sound like more of a medium term thing, at least, right? Like, hey, we're going to work with him. You know, we're going to try to get his fitness back up to speed. It's going to be a bit of a project. So not the biggest surprise. And, you know, anytime a veteran comes in on a PTO, and especially to a roster that's already as crowded up front as the Canucks roster is, they're going to have to do something pretty special in order to make the NHL team at a training camp. I don't think we saw that from Sammy Blais. And then when you consider that they already had this mechanism built in for him to go to Abbotsford, not a big surprise that that's where we're ending up right now.
No. And yeah, I think you framed it correctly. When Tocchet talked about Sammy Blais, it sounded more like not yet than no.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that actually does matter. And we'll see if Blais, you know, failed to catch the attention of another NHL team. Right. And because that's always an option when a player is released from a PTO, even if they have an AHL contract, you know, we'll see here. Canucks have so much in the air, so many balls in the air here. And I think ultimately, whether it's Ratu or Lekkerimäki or Sprong or even Phil DiGiuseppe, you know, or Baines on down the list, like, it wasn't like Blaze Case was unassailable.
No.
You know, like, or if he even made a very strong one, right? Like, he looked the part. It was clear that his profile would differ from anything else the Canucks have with Dakota Joshua out of the lineup. I'd think that keeps him in the mix as a consideration down the line, but he didn't exactly kick the door down.
No. And again, we're talking about, what, one spot in the lineup, maybe a couple spots on the roster total. So he had a lot to do. And as we said, it's going to be an ongoing process, barring him going to another NHL organization for the Canucks. And Sammy Blais. We'll skip the broadsheet of the portion of the whiteboard today. We'll go right to the lineup notes. Of course, it is a game day for the Canucks. They're playing in Edmonton. No game day skate today for the Canucks. Rick Tocchet's going to speak to the media, I believe, at 3:30 Pacific time. In Edmonton, so that'll be after our show. We'll see. Typically, what they've done on these road preseason games so far is they don't give us the lines, but they announce the roster that'll be traveling to play in the game. So we'll keep our eyes peeled, see if that comes out while we're on the air here. Just based on the, you know, with the so-called dress rehearsal game probably coming up on Friday, it would surprise me a little bit if we see a lot of the key players, especially, you know, Pettersson's already gotten a couple games. You know, you figure he has one more left on Friday. Hughes, Besser, same thing, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of the kind of aspirational players, the fringe players who are still left, get in this one, maybe get one last chance to impress the coaches in this one against Edmonton tonight. But we'll see when the Canucks, if and when the Canucks announce the roster, if it's going to take on the Oilers. By the way, from an Oilers perspective, and this is per Tony Brar of Oilers TV, just the top six group for the Edmonton Oilers tonight, but it features Vasily Podkolzin skating with Connor McDavid and Corey Perry on the top line, the second line featuring Leon Draisaitl with Jeff Skinner and Victor Arvidsson. So former Canuck prospect, former Canuck player, Vasily Podkolzin getting a chance to skate with Connor McDavid against his old team in this one tonight. And should note that both McDavid and Draisaitl are going to be in the lineup for this one. So for whoever does play for the Canucks, and whether it's, you know, somebody trying to crack the bottom six, Ratu trying to show he's a center option, some good competition to go out there and try to make an impression against tonight in Edmonton. Okay, lots of other stuff to get into in terms of lineup notes that developed over the weekend. Should mention the Canucks made several cuts over the weekend. I'll run through them here. Danila Klimovich, Tristan Nielsen, Ty Young, all assigned to Abbotsford. Chase Waters, who was on a PTO, but is an Abbotsford player, he was released from his PTO, so he'll go back to Abbotsford. And Sawyer Mineo and Vilmar Ulriksson sent back to their junior clubs. The note there, of course, that Victor Ulriksson signs his ELC with the team. So big, big step from young stars to that point for Vilmar Ulriksson, to come in and earn his ELC with the team.
Yeah, and I felt like that had been telegraphed with some of the commentary and usage, right? That's what a strong camp looks like, right? Like, that's when you know you've a team is high on a player. That's a stamp, as it were, sending them back to junior with that NHL contract in hand. And yeah, I mean, look, Vilmar Ulriksson, I think we can all see, it's hard to miss, the tools and potential, right? The willingness to mix it up, the physical assertiveness in the corners.
Him being 6'6".
Towering over everybody, a giant human being. And I think we could see some of the stuff that he needs to work on in terms of the puck skills, in terms of the just like overall processing of the game. And this is a guy who wasn't a dominant player in junior last year, right? He wasn't a point per game guy even for Guelph as a draft plus one player. You know, that should be a baseline. And in fact, you're hoping that he pops more significantly than that, right? You're hoping you're getting something like an Anthony Romani type glow up. Where he, you know, flirts with like 100 points. And look, maybe that's not his game. It's not that it has to be. But as I always say, right, even the guys who end up playing roles in the NHL tend to be dominant junior scorers. Who was the gentleman? Tom Sestito? You ever look up Tom Sestito's OHL goal titles?
I'm going to right now.
50 plus, baby.
Yeah.
50-plus, like, huge seasons. Like, he had a 50-goal, like, 4-assist season for the Saginaw Spirit. You've looked it up. So
Tom Sestito played for Plymouth.
Plymouth.
He had a 42-goal season with 22 assists.
Yeah, baby.
And he would have been in his 19...
Yeah, draft plus one.
Yeah, his 1920 season. Yeah, so draft turned 19 in September that year.
So think about what Tom Sestito was in the NHL. 40-plus, 65-plus points, or 65-ish points. You know, as a non-overage player in major junior, and then you get to the NHL and you're Tom Sestito, right? Which, like, no disrespect, Tom Sestito carved out a useful career. John Tortorella loved him. Did he have a 10-goal season in a Canucks uniform?
He had a 5-goal season for the Canucks.
It felt like 10 goals, man. He was in on every play.
He had a 5-goal, 213 penalty minute season for the Canucks. Yeah. He played 77 games.
Yeah, there you go. Like... And it hails from Utica, I think, was like kind of signed by the organization when they went back to Utica to have like a local foothold and worked his way into the lineup. Like, credit to him, man. Anyway, point being, you're hoping to see Ulrichsson like really blow up offensively if he's going to be one of those guys with a shot at being, you know, a top nine guy, especially, or more than fourth line guy in the NHL.
Well, and I think clearly the organization sees that potential. I mean, you don't hand out an ELC to a player unless you think there's at least a very good chance that they have that kind of glow up in this season going back to Guelph. And, I, you know, he's going to be one of the...
Although this will slide.
Yeah, for sure. But, like, still, you don't have to do
totally.
It. It wasn't like it was a pressure point where they had to do it or risk losing him right now, right? Like, no, they're doing it as a signal of, we really like you, and we think you've got potential down the road.
Yeah, and he was drafted out of Europe, too, so it's like they have 4 years with his rights, even though he played in the OHL, right? So there was zero rush or pressure point. This is absolutely like making a young player a made guy.
And I think all of a sudden now he becomes really one of the key prospects that Canucks fans will be monitoring from afar during his season. And I know when we have Buchla on every Wednesday now, like, well, if he's doing stuff in the OHL or if he's not doing stuff up to our expectations in the OHL,
we're going to hear about
that'll
it.
That'll be a topic of conversation for us for sure. All right. So we made reference to the juicy story developing at training camp right now. And I think you framed it really well, actually, right? It's Atu Ratu. That's the headline here. But it's not just Atu Ratu. It's the fact that he has been playing so consistently with Nils Höglander and Connor Garland, and that Rick Tocchet has so consistently praised not just Atu Ratu, but that line and the way they're working together. And, of course, in the loss on Saturday against Calgary, Ratu scores on a nice setup from Connor Garland on the 2-on-1. And with the way the roster is developing and the lineup is developing right now, I would say until Dakota Joshua comes back, there's at least one, maybe two, depending on how you want to handicap Daniel Sprong's chances of making the team and if he's a lock for the opening night lineup. But until Dakota Joshua comes back, there's at least one spot open for a fairly significant group of players chasing it, right? And that's Ratu, Lekkomäki, Carlson, Phil DiGiuseppe, Nils Amon, Arshdeep Bains, throw Max Sasson in there, I guess. So that's a pretty long list. And if you were ranking those guys right now and you had to play a regular season game that you were, you know, that you wanted to win tomorrow, who's getting in? I think it's Atu Ratu right now. And I think it's probably Atu Ratu, maybe even between Connor Garland and Nils Höglander on a third line. And I know, you know, a lot of people have Teddy Bluger penciled in there. That would probably bump him if he's healthy. We haven't seen him play a game yet either, down to the fourth line. But I think at this point, you know, there was a while there where, hey, Lekkomäki was getting the reps with Pettersson and DeBrusk, and we really liked some of his puck skills and what he was doing. But I think you just look at the overall package, the, you know, quote unquote stiffness in his game that Rick Tocchet has referenced, the ability to play center, win draws, the chemistry he's found with Höglander and Garland, I kind of think this is Ratu's spot to lose right now. Again, pending the return of Dakota Joshua to the lineup at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel that way going into the final week. There's still two games. And yep. I think more than it being about Ratu like pulling ahead of Phil DiGiuseppe and company, I think the way to think about it is, can he dislodge Pew Suter from center? You see what I'm saying? Like, I actually think this battle, because the way that I'm sort of considering it is, I don't think you keep Atu Ratu to make him your fourth line left wing the way you might keep Phil DiGiuseppe,
yeah,
right? The way you might keep Nils Amon. right? Nails him on. It's like, we need a depth center and a left wing. Nails him on, right? If you're keeping Ratu, you're keeping him at center because he's priority for the organization. So in some ways, that creates a harder hurdle for him, but it also opens up a path that's unavailable, probably.
To Phil DiGiuseppe.
Certainly to Phil DiGiuseppe, yeah. But maybe to Nils Amon.
Yeah.
To be totally honest with you, right? Especially because what does Nils Amon not have over Pugh Suter that Atu Ratu might?
His face-off ability. Face-offs. Yeah.
Right? So how often have we talked about with Amon, right? Like,
if he was a 51% face-off
52,
winner, all his NHL path looks completely different than it does right now.
He needs to get there. And it looks like Ratu's gotten there quickly, right, at a younger age. That's the sort of cruelty of this league, even if you've played 100 games for an NHL team, over 2 years. I actually saw, I think Nils Amon has played the most games in his draft class.
Really?
Among guys selected after the first round.
Good for him, man.
I was
man.
Like looking at that the other day. Yeah. I was like, that's amazing.
That's
good. I think it's 111 off the top of my head. But unbelievable. Like, no, the 33rd pick of the draft that year, because I think it was 2020, has not played as many as Nils Amon. So by no means is this criticism of a guy who's accomplished an awful lot in this league for this team. But I think the consideration is, do we need Ratu's face-off winning ability in the lineup? And if we do, that... then we can push Pugh Suter out to the wing. And by the way, pushing Pugh Suter out to the wing isn't not necessarily a negative. Like, that means by beating out Pugh Suter at center, if that's the direction the club decides to go with Ratu, that also creates an environment where you're no longer talking about Baines versus Carlson versus Phil DiGiuseppe versus Nils Amon for that fourth line left wing spot.
Yeah.
You're talking about Pugh Suter.
Yeah.
And he doesn't necessarily have to play fourth line. We've seen how well he fits in with JT Miller and Brock Besser. Seen him.
You almost like, in a way, you're almost freeing him up to go back to being that super utility piece, right? Because he's not like, you're not like, oh man, we need him at center to fill out our four lines. It's like, well, if we have Ratu there, we can move him around the lineup a little bit to maybe patch some holes elsewhere.
So like, if Ratu is a third line caliber center, you know, from a overall impact perspective, in some ways, you also gain another middle six, and like, not a polite middle six where you like say you're trying to like pretend that a third liner, you're trying to shoehorn a third liner into the conversation with a second line player as if, you know, there's a true link between them. Like, I mean, an impactful, like a really, really good, probably low end second line impact guy. That actually helps a lot. So that's an interesting, in my opinion anyway, like an interesting texture, I guess, to this decision facing the org.
Yeah, and I think the other part of the conversation is, if Ratu makes the team, and considering the salary cap situation and the desire to stay out of LTIR and everything, I know IMAC mentioned in a piece, like, they might just have 21 players instead of 23 on the roster to open the season.
Well, I mean, they might.
Yeah.
There's no way around that. That's been baked in for a bit.
Yeah.
Unless they use LTI.
Yes, exactly. Unless they decide to go into LTIR.
And,
so,
and even that, you know, like if a guy like Cole McWard can't get healthy in time, you know what I mean? So we haven't seen him skate in the preseason. We haven't seen him skate with
He was week to week at when they opened training camp. So
he has to be accounted for, even though he's a training camp injury. So he has to go on IR. If he goes on IR, he remains
counts
on the
cap.
Yep. But frees up a roster spot. All of a sudden, you probably have to enter the season with 20
to stay out of LTI.
I think you might have to submit an opening day roster at 21. I think it's 20 or 21. I'll have to double check the fine print there.
Anyways, because the other part of it is, if Ratu makes the team, you probably have to send down one of Nils Amon or Phil DiGiuseppe. You have to put them on waivers. Now, I don't think
If Ratu's making your team and you want an extra defenseman.
Yeah, that's true.
Then you're talking
about
12
forwards. You're just going to carry 12 forwards. Yeah.
Right. And this is sort of where the Mark Friedman of it all also sort of rears its head or comes into play. Rears its head. That makes it sound like Mark Friedman making the team would be a bad thing. And that's absolutely not what I'm suggesting. This is where the Mark Friedman of it all sort of comes into play, where it's, if you have to start the season with 21 guys, right? If you've got Demko and Joshua out at least a week, which is what you're committing to missing a guy if they open the season on IR. What's the value of the guy who can play right side, left side, and wing as to be the extra body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to only have one skater, is it Juulsen over Friedman because of penalty killing ability?
Yeah.
Or do you prize the versatility in that moment?
Yeah. It's a fair question.
It's an interesting one, right?
Okay, just we've got to go to break really quickly, but Jason Greger out of Edmonton has tweeted the Canucks' expected lineup tonight in Edmonton. And yeah, these guys might have their hands full with McDavid and Draisaitl on the other side. So here, again, I don't know if they didn't skate, so I'm not entirely, I can't vouch for the accuracy of this, but here's how Jason Greger has it. Pew Suter centering the top line with Harshdeep Baines and Daniel Sprong. Ratu with Nils Höglander and Lekkerimäki. Nils Amon with Phil DiGiuseppe and Kiefer Sherwood. Max Sasson with Nate Smith and Ty Mueller on the fourth line. And then the defense, Elias Pettersson with Noah Juulsen, Kirill Kurjacev with Desharnais, Willanen and Friedman, and then Lankinen in net. So key players for the Canucks not making this trip, as we kind of predicted, and a heavy AHL lineup for the Canucks going to Edmonton.
A really challenging final preseason look for Kurjacev and
Pettersson
in particular. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was trying to say his first name, and I'm always going to like take a minute.
A minute to be like, Elias.
Yeah. Anyway, and then obviously, so we don't get the full Höglander, Garland, Ratu experience, but we do get Ratu with Höglander.
Yeah.
And
Lekkerimäki.
And Lekkerimäki.
That's fun.
Should be. And lastly, you get one last chance. Suter versus Atu Ratu
at center
with McDavid and Draisaitl playing on different lines. So decent. Not that they're going to be at full tilt or anything.
No.
The Oilers weren't at full tilt 25 games in the season last year, much less the preseason, but still a fascinating sort of test as the Canucks narrow down their choices with the preseason rolling along.
All right, we'll take a break. Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and InGoal Magazine next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.